Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Renanime, and welcome to another episode of Cops Corner. If this is your first time listening, then welcome, and to our returning listeners, welcome back. This is the 79th episode, so thank you for tuning in. On this episode, we are going to continue our AFI series that we've been doing for a while now with Chinatown. Chinatown's a 1974... I guess you could say it's a mystery, it's a noir film in color, it's a neo-noir, you know. But anyway, a private detective hired to expose an adulterer in 1930s Los Angeles finds himself caught up in a web of deceit, corruption, and murder. Storyline. In 1937 Los Angeles, private investigator Jake J.J. Giddies specializes in cheating spouses cases. His current target is Hollis Mulray, high-profile chief engineer for the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, whose wife suspects him of infidelity. In following Mulray, Giddies witnesses some unusual business dealings, such as a public meeting for construction of a new dam to create additional water supply for Los Angeles. As fresh water is vital to the growing community during the chronic drought, Mulray opposes the dam. Eventually, Giddies sees Mulray meeting with an unknown young woman who isn't his wife. Once news of the supposed tryst between Mulray and this woman hits the media, additional information comes to light that makes Giddies believe that Mulray is being framed for something and that he himself is being set up. In his investigation of the issue behind Mulray's framing and his own setup, Giddies is assisted by Mulray's wife Evelyn, but he thinks she isn't being forthright with him. The further he gets into the investigation, the more secrets he uncovers about the Mulray's professional and personal dealings, including Mulray's former business partnership with Evelyn's father, Noah Cross. The identity of the unknown woman may be the key to uncovering the whole story. This storyline is provided to us by the user named Hugo, H-U-G-G-O, on IMDb. Shout out to Hugo. The movie is directed by Roman Polanski. Roman Polanski, you have seen his work on The Ghost Rider in 2010, The Tenant, 1976, not to be confused with Christopher Nolan's Tenet, which came out in 2020. No, The Tenant, 1976, and Rosemary's Baby back in 1968. The movie was written by Robert Town and Roman Polanski. Robert Towne is known for his work on The Last Detail, 1973, the very first Mission Impossible movie in 1996, and Tequila Sunrise in 88. The movie stars Jack Nicholson as J.J. Giddies. Jack Nicholson, I mean, I feel like most of us have seen something that he's been in. He's known for playing Costello in The Departed in 2006, directed by Martin Scorsese. Melvin Udall in As Good As It Gets, 1997. R.P. McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, 1975. This movie is number 33 on the AFI Top 100. I think he also played Johnny in The Shining, which may or may not be on the list. And I know him as the Joker from the 1989 Batman movie. He starred as the Joker alongside Michael Keaton as Batman, directed by Tim Burton. The movie stars Faye Dunaway as Evelyn Mulray. Faye Dunaway is known for playing Diana Christensen in Network back in 1976. Network is number 64 on the AFI Top 100, so we'll be reviewing that in a future episode. She played Bonnie Parker in Bonnie and Clyde, 1967. That movie's number 42 on the AFI Top 100. So we'll be reviewing Bonnie and Clyde probably before we review Network. And Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest, 1981. Last but not least, we have John Huston as Noah Cross. John Huston is an actor-director known for playing the American in Tampico in The White Suit. He's uncredited in the movie The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, number 38 on the AFI Top 100. And he has directed Asphalt Jungle as well as Prizzy's Honor. Let's go to Cop's Corner.
The blood creeping up from the heathens. Got will, got fight, got pride, got reason. If they wanna go eat, then you know I'm gonna feed them. If you're coming for me, hope you're ready for a demon. I got eyes in the back of my head, I'm seeing. Take me for granted and you know I'm leaving. I'ma take what's mine with the webs I'm weaving. I could take this crowd from seeing to believing. Got a taste for blood in my tongue.
So this movie came out 50 years ago. This movie came out in 1974, and the movie is more of a sort of, I guess, like I said in the introduction, that it's more of a film noir. I guess throughout this segment of the episode, I'm gonna compare and contrast this movie to a few scenes in Sunset Boulevard. So if you have not listened to my review of Sunset Boulevard, please go and check that episode out as well. So I will be talking about Sunset Boulevard a bit in this review. The movie's opening scene, we're introduced to J.J. Giddies as he's showing one of his clients photos that he's taken of, I guess, the client's wife who was having an affair. And so the movie opens up with some, like, semi-explicit photos. And the client is played by Burt Young, and J.J. Giddies is played by Jack Nicholson. And I forget the client's name, but in this opening scene, we see how Mr. Giddies, he's really just a guy who is kind of about his business. He's kind of, you know, I guess you could say maybe morally neutral. Like, he kind of just does his job, you know. Gets paid. Again, like I said in the introduction, his specialty is working as a private investigator to investigate cheating spouses. You know, that's kind of his specialty. You know, spouses who, you know, men and even sometimes women who will accuse their spouse of infidelity. They come to him, and then he, you know, either, you know, catch them in the act, or, you know, almost kind of like, for the Marvel fans, almost like what Jessica Jones would do. You know, Jessica Jones, you know, private investigator, that sort of thing, that kind of detective work. So that's who J.J. Giddies is. And then one day he gets hired by an Ida Summers. Ida Summers to someone named Ida Summers hires J.J. Giddies to investigate her husband. She says her husband is Hollis Mulray. She suspects her husband of cheating. So she hires J.J. Giddies. Now, Hollis Mulray, he is, like I said in the storyline, a high-profile chief engineer for the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. All right, so during his investigation, Giddies, he attends a public hearing for the Los Angeles Water and Power, for the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. They want to build a dam in Los Angeles, and there's like, and it's like something about, like, they want to build this dam, but then that's going to cut water off from the farmers, the farmers who actually need the water to grow their crops, and then, you know, they're cutting off water from the crops. But then Mulray, he's actually Hollis Mulray. He's the one who's actually against the. Building of the dam. So then, Giddies actually ends up going and continuing his investigation. He does get some photos of Mulray at a place called Echo Park with his mistress, and then also a photo, and also get some photos, either him or members of his team, they get photos of him at, I guess, the mistress's house, with, you know, photos of Hollis Mulray with his mistress. So it starts out as just a regular case for, you know, Jake, JJ, Giddies. But then he goes back to his office and he's approached by an Evelyn Mulray, who's played by Faye Dunaway. Now, Evelyn Mulray, she says how she has never, she tells Mr. Giddies how she says, "Hi, I'm Evelyn Mulray, and is it true that you and I have never met before? You know, is it true that, you know, you and I haven't met?" And because apparently the woman who had gone to J.J. Giddies' office earlier had said that she was Evelyn Mulray, and now the real Evelyn Mulray has come, and now she has sort of. And now she actually wants Jake Giddies to investigate her husband, and then this leads to like multiple visits to the LA River, and one thing leads to another, and eventually Hollis Mulray is killed, and you know, in the coroner's office they find salt water in his blood. You know, his body's found in the river, and they find salt water in his blood. So it's suspected that he was drowned, although the LA River is kind of a riverbed. So Giddies, over the course of this movie, from like the first act to the third act, he initially approaches this case as just another, you know, infidelity case, whatever. And then he starts to have a more vested interest in this case and in this Evelyn Mulray. Upon his death, upon Mulray's death, Giddies then visits the office. He then visits what was Hollis Mulray's old office and meets with Mulray's boss, and then actually finds a picture of Noah Cross, who is the father, although we didn't know it yet, this is why I think you gotta watch this movie like a couple times, but we see that Noah Cross is the father of Evelyn Mulray, and that the two of them are business partners, and we actually see photos of Cross and of Noah Cross and Hollis Mulray. So then Giddies, he goes back to Evelyn and says how, "Why didn't you tell me that your husband and your father were business partners?" And then she mentions how they had some sort of falling out, some sort of disagreement, and then that eventually led to Hollis having the affair. So like the pieces start to kind of come together. You know, this is kind of like a you know, the typical tropes of, you know, a film noir and like the hero's journey. It's like one question's answered only to bring up two more questions, and you know, it all kind of comes together in the end, but you're just on the edge of your seat the whole time. Noah Cross He is the owner of a place called the Albacore Club, which is essentially, it's like a country club, which is essentially like a country club. And then one night, Giddy's gets a phone call. Giddy's gets a phone call from somebody, and I don't think it's ever confirmed who calls him, tells him to look in that week's obituaries and you'll find one of them. So after having dinner with Evelyn Mulray, Giddy's realizes that her initials are like ECM, and he asks, what does the C stand for? She says, Cross, it's my maiden name. So that's when it's revealed that Evelyn is Noah Cross's daughter. And in the obituary, there's all these different like last names of people who, and then one person who's written in the obituary, they died 2 weeks ago, but land was purchased in their name a week ago. And, you know, so at this point, Giddy starts to like put things together. Like, okay, so Noah Cross or somebody has been like purchasing land, buying up all this farmland that's in the valley, that's not even a part of Los Angeles proper, buying up the valley in, you know, and using, I guess, supposedly dead people's names, you know, or there's these obituaries. But turns out these people aren't actually dead. You know, Giddy's, he pays a visit to this funeral home that's really more of a retirement home, and there's this room full of elderly people, and then he goes over to one of the ladies and he like reads her names, like, are you so and so? And he kind of like, and he says how like, you're very rich because land was purchased in her name when she didn't even know it. And there's like a fake story out there that she's actually dead. So yeah, we see that with the Albacore Club is really just kind of like a front that Noah Cross has been using to buy up the land. Well, the Water and Power Department, they've been using it to buy up the land in order to incorporate the town into incorporate the valley into the city of Los Angeles, excuse me. And so there's this, you know, that's one of the big reveals of this movie. That's one of my favorite parts. You know, another big reveal is when, like, that same night where like there's a shootout at this funeral place, this funeral parlor. They have to leave. You know, Evelyn and Jake have to make a dash, and then they crash at I guess Evelyn's house. The two of them, I guess they crash at Evelyn's house. They end up sleeping together, and then Evelyn gets a phone call. And she says how she has to leave like immediately, and as she's showering, Giddy sneaks out and he breaks one of the tail lights. Breaks one of the tail lights so he can identify the car, and then he waits for her to leave, and then he follows her car and follows her over to wherever she was going, and turns out that she's actually going over to. And then Jake actually sees Evelyn with Hollis's supposed girlfriend, supposedly the girlfriend that her deceased husband was having an affair with. Now I realize that this is an audio only podcast. You can't see that I have putting air quotes around girlfriend, air quotes around affair as well, which I'll explain in just a second. And, you know, Jake Giddy's, you know, he realizes, like, he's thinking, like, have I been being played the whole time? Like, have I been being, like, scammed? You know, it's like, Evelyn knows who Hollis's, like, girlfriend was? Like, were they even really having an affair? And then a couple scenes later, it's revealed. Now, this is actually a bit of a shocker. And, you know, this movie is, again, it's R-rated. It is intended for mature audiences only. All right. What I'm about to say. All right. So, it's revealed that Hollis's supposed girlfriend is actually both Evelyn's sister and Evelyn's daughter. Evelyn was raped by her father. So yeah, that's one of the big reveals. And now, typically in film noirs, there's the femme fatale, which directly translates to deadly woman. The deadly woman, the femme fatale. Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. No, I did mention Sunset Boulevard earlier in the segment. Again, go check out my reviews of Sunset Boulevard if you haven't already. Norma Desmond, she is the femme fatale. She's the love interest who turns into the antagonist. And now, given the film noirs, like, I think, like, Double Indemnity, and, like, there's a lot of, like, other film noirs from, like, the 1940s and 50s, here we are in the 70s, a period piece that takes place about 40 years prior, you know, a 1930s period piece. Giddies almost assumes that Evelyn is the femme fatale, all right? And given the fact that, like, with everything that we know about the femme fatale and about noirs, you know, Giddies is kind of playing on that default. He kind of attacks Evelyn, actually smacks her in one of the scenes, like the scene where Evelyn finally reveals, like, she says how she's my sister, I mean my daughter, she's my daughter, my sister. And so, yeah, you know, Giddies is actually, like, you know, hitting Evelyn in that scene. Come to find out, she's not the femme fatale. She's not the deadly woman. But instead, she is the victim. She's not the antagonist, but she is a victim. And the real villain of the story is Noah Cross. The real victim's Noah Cross. So Giddy starts to sort of piece things together that Noah Cross was the one who killed. Cross was the one who killed Hollis Mulray and drowned him in the pond. There's a pond on the Mulray property. There's a pond, and there's glasses. Mulray wore glasses. His glasses, which are cracked, were left at the bottom of that pond. And there's a Chinese houseworker who, like, as he was getting, like, grass out of the out of the pond in an earlier scene, he says, "Bad for grass." Now, due to his thick Chinese accent, Giddies heard "bad for glass," you know. But no, salt water, bad for the grass. So yeah, you know, Giddies is able to kind of start to piece that together. The ending of the movie does almost, like, pay homage to films like, I know I keep going back to Sunset Boulevard, but I feel like that's the only film noir that we've reviewed so far. I look forward to reviewing other film noirs in the future, but the scene where, like, Evelyn has the gun, or Evelyn has, like, the gun, she escapes to Chinatown with Burt Young's character. He actually comes back, and he's actually an accomplice to their escape to Chinatown. And, you know, Evelyn, along with her sister / daughter, they're about to make an escape. And, you know, they're stopped by Noah Cross. Noah Cross, who says that he has a right to, you know, he's like, I'm her grandfather. I should be in her life. You know, she has a right to know me and that sort of thing. Evelyn actually shoots Noah, the ending of the movie, she shoots Noah, all right? She thinks that she's killed him. She gets in the car, starts to drive away, but then Noah ends up, I can't remember if it's Noah or if it's one of the other police that he's working with, because Evelyn even says how he owns the police. You know, Jake tries to calm her down, says like, we can go to the police. She's like, he owns the police. You know, he's rich and he's powerful. He runs everything. Evelyn gets killed. There's no poetic justice. I would say there is no poetic justice in the end of this movie. Most noir films, like, the protagonist either gets shot or maybe gets killed, but then has a profound revelation, kind of like the protagonist in Sunset Boulevard gets killed by Norma Desmond. But then really the movie is supposed to be, I guess, his ghost as the narrator, and he's sort of like learned something, if that makes sense. But that doesn't happen with this movie. This movie diverts away from, again, normal film noirs. Evelyn is not the femme fatale, and she ends up killed in the end. She ends up getting killed in the end. She's not the one who does the killing. All right, and I'll talk more about that in our analysis segment. But yeah, there's no poetic justice. And then the movie ends with, now this was the opening line that I had in the cold open, with one of the other officers saying, "Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown." Okay, so now on to Chinatown Plus. The movie won one Oscar. In total, the movie had 21 award wins and 24 total nominations. At the Academy Awards, Robert Evans was nominated for Best Picture. Jack Nicholson was nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role. Faye Dunaway was nominated for Best Actress in a Leading Role. Roman Polanski was nominated for Best Director, and Robert Towne won Best Writing of an Original Screenplay. So that is only one win and one, two, three, four nominations. Four nominations and one win. Trivia. At the time of filming, Jack Nicholson had just embarked on his long-standing relationship with Angelica Huston. This made his scene with her father, John Huston, rather uncomfortable, especially as the only time Angelica was on set was the day they were filming the scene where Noah Cross interrogates Nicholas's character with Mr. Giddies. "Do you sleep with my daughter?" Wow, that was a little... Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like reality and fiction, and your, you know, actors and their off-camera lives kind of bleeds into their on-camera lives. I feel like John Huston, he might not have been acting in that scene. He might have been like being for real, and then it probably just worked. And then Polanski was like, "Yeah, let's just this is actually really good. It's actually really good. No, keep going. Keep the camera rolling. Yeah. It's perfect. Yeah, we need this shot." Yeah. After several takes that never looked quite right, Faye Dunaway got annoyed and told Jack Nicholson to actually slap her. He did, and felt guilty for it, despite it being Dunaway's decision. The shot made it into the movie. Okay. Alright, well, I know, again, it was the 70s, and that was when you started to see more and more of the censorship kind of get pulled back a bit, you know, bit by bit. You started hearing profanity in movies, you started... And yeah, I mean, I had mentioned that Giddies actually, you know, smacks Evelyn. But yeah, you know, Jack Nicholson, of course, you know, you should never, ever put your hands on men listening. Never, ever, ever put your hands on a woman. Ever. All right. But yeah, the fact that Faye Dunaway asked Jack Nicholson to do it, you know. Roman Polanski said that in staying true to the tradition of Raymond Chandler's detective stories, he shot the whole movie from the perspective of the main character. Okay. I did realize that. I realized the entire movie is like told from Giddy's perspective. It's not told from anybody else's perspective, I realized. So, good for you, Roman Polanski. I can't wait to have you on the show. Screenwriter Robert Towne was originally offered $125,000 to write a screenplay for The Great Gatsby, 1974, but Towne felt he couldn't do better than F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel and accepted $25,000 to write his own story, Chinatown, instead. Yeah, I mean, Great Gatsby is one of my favorite books that I read in high school. It's probably my second favorite fictional book, like, of the, like, novels, of the fictional novels that I read in high school. I put The Great Gatsby, it's my second favorite, second only to To Kill a Mockingbird, which I realize is actually on the list. Great Gatsby is not on the AFI list, I don't think. That's a movie that's been remade, like, 12 times, so... Maybe I'll review one of the 15 adaptations of The Great Gatsby in a future episode. But, yeah, good for you, Robert Towne, you know, taking a pay cut and choosing to do your own movie instead. Yeah. Shout out to you, Robert Towne. Last bit of trivia, Jack Nicholson. Jake Giddies. I've been saying Jack this whole time. It's Jake Giddies. Is present in every scene of the film. That is true. That is true. That is very true. Like, there's actually, now that I think about it, like, there's actually very few movies where, like, there's one character who's in every single scene. But again, you know, big, big shout out to, you know, Polanski for, I think that's the bell going off. My bad, guys. Shout out to you, Polanski, for, you know, staying true to the tradition of Raymond Chandler. Raymond Chandler's detective stories. Raymond Chandler, that's a great first name. But yeah, so Jack Nicholson, he's present in every scene of the film. Probably got paid top dollar. There was a cameo from C.O. Erickson. The film's executive producer plays the banker in the barbershop who starts an argument with Jake. Wow, okay. So, I mean, it's like the oldest, not even trope in Hollywood, but like, you know, directors and producers like putting themselves in their movies. I think, I've only seen one of Alfred Hitchcock's movies. I watched Rear Window when I was in high school. I've heard that Alfred Hitchcock, that he would put himself in his own movies, that he would kind of put himself in the background of some of his movies. I think Psycho is on the list. The original Psycho from 1960, not the Vince Vaughn remake garbage, But yeah, you know, cameo from the executive producer. And he was not the only cameo in this movie. We got a cameo from the director, Roman Polanski. Although he liked the idea of doing a cameo in the film as the hood who slits Jack Nicholson's nose, he was less thrilled about having to have his long hair cut off for his brief appearance in the film. Yeah, he had to have his hair cut off. I've even heard that Polanski and Nicholson, that they kind of got into it a bit on set, as well as Faye Dunaway, that, you know, she had kind of had numerous arguments with Polanski behind the scenes. I've always said that those movies, I've always said that it's the movies where, like, the co-stars can't get along, or there's, like, back and forth behind the scenes. Those movies always come out bad. Maybe Chinatown's the exception, because Chinatown, it's a classic. And I've also heard that there were sequels planned that just never really, like, happened. There was, like, a second and third one. Well, the second one, I think it was, like, Two Jacks, was, like, a spiritual sequel to the first one. And then they were planning on doing a third one that just never happened. Nevertheless, I think Chinatown is a classic. But generally speaking, whenever there's shenanigans behind the scenes, we've seen it happen a million times. And then the movie comes out bad. User review, the movie got it all. Perfectly paced study of human darkness. 10 out of 10. I knew Chinatown was hailed as the paragon of a film noir, and that's why I finally got down to watching it. However, despite having known about the movie for quite a while, I wasn't really prepared for just how dark it could be. The movie starts slowly, with a private detective taking on what looks like a routine case, but soon he finds himself enmeshed in a web of conspiracy, murder, lies, and deceit. The plot is like a perfect machine that relentlessly moves toward a final resolution that is truly epic and truly soul-wrenching. In a recent New York Times piece, they called Chinatown a meditation on evil, which is spot on. Set in 1937, this movie is just all around perfect. First and foremost, how everything is connected within the grand structure of the movie. This is rich in themes: water, evil, trust, guilt, and greed. And even richer in suspense as the audience, just like our protagonist, tries to find out what is happening. The story is quote-unquote complex for sure, but it's not quote-unquote complicated. Everything makes sense in the end, and the complexity pays off big time. Besides the impeccable screenplay, everything else about this film is perfect as well. Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway carry the movie with sophistication and dignity. Dunaway's stunning performance in particular fills every scene with an aura of mystery as you are trying to find out what her motives are. The set pieces are beautiful, the score is compelling, and camera work and editing could not be any better. There's a reason this one is called a classic, so if you're ready to delve deep into a richly layered exploration of the dark side of humanity, enjoy the ride, but don't expect to come back unscathed. This user review is provided to us from Strogos, Strogos, on August 26, 2017, from IMDb. Big shout out to Strogos. I couldn't agree more. This movie, it's a wild ride. It does start out kind of slow, and I would say it's a movie that kind of makes you think. Like, you have to pay attention because there's like a lot going on. Yeah, because there's like a lot going on at times. It's complex, but it's not complicated. It is, I mean, New York Times, they said it perfectly, a meditation on evil. Meditation on evil, yet the dark side, we see the dark side of humanity, the worst side of humanity, and how that manifests in society and in business, and so yeah, I mean, this movie is for sure a classic. Yep, 10 out of 10. Well, the average IMDb rating has an average rating of 8.1 out of 10 and a Letterboxd score of 4.3 out of 5. I'm hesitant to ever give a movie a 10 out of 10. I give this movie maybe like an 8.7 out of 10. Yeah, maybe 8.7 out of 10 is my official rating. So, the movie was released on June 20th, 1974, in the United States. It's an American film. The movie is filmed primarily in English. There's, I think, like one or two scenes in Cantonese, and then maybe a couple scenes in Spanish as well. The movie is also known as Kitajska Ketra. I don't know how to pronounce that, and I don't know what language that is. One of the main filming locations was Big Tahunga Wash at Foothill Boulevard, Sunland, Los Angeles, California, USA. This was the dry riverbed. Dry riverbed. Okay, so Big Tahunga or Tahunga Wash at Foothill Boulevard. So I'm definitely getting my ticket. I'm going there as soon as I'm in LA. Big shout out to all my listeners in the state of California, the Sunshine State. My listeners in Los Angeles, California. I don't know if it's a drought right now or if it's been raining, but yeah, big shout out to the state of California, shout out to LA, shout out to, you know, Hollywood, Oakland, Pasadena, San Francisco, Oakland, I already said Oakland, Anaheim. I've been to Anaheim. I went to a engineering conference in Anaheim 2 years ago. NSBE, Region 1, all right. Okay, we're getting sidetracked. The movie's production companies are Paramount Pictures, Penthouse Video, and Long Road Productions. You know, Paramount Pictures, they make some pretty quality stuff. A couple of the movies we've reviewed have been from Paramount Pictures. So, the movie had an estimated box office budget of $6 million, which in today's money would be about $37.8 million. The movie's domestic box office haul was $29.2 million, about $182.6 million in 2024. Its gross worldwide was slightly over that. It was about $29,226,000, which is about $182.8 million in today's money. The movie has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, 98% tomato meter score, and a 93% audience score. I'm in with the audience on this one, 93%. Like, it's still a great movie, but I don't know. It's not The Godfather, which I know is not really a fair comparison, but like, it's a great movie still, you know, in the 90s, but you know me, I'm hesitant to ever give anything 10 out of 10 or 100, you know. The critics' consensus: as bruised and cynical as the decade that produced it, this noir classic benefits from Robert Towne's brilliant screenplay, director Roman Polanski's steady hand, and wonderful performances from Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. Enough said. Where can you watch Chinatown? You can watch Chinatown with a subscription on Paramount Plus, Prime Video, or you can rent it on Fandango at Home, Apple TV, or buy on Fandango at Home or Apple TV. Rent or buy on Fandango at Home or Apple TV. You can also watch it with a subscription to Prime Video or Paramount Plus. I was able to watch this with my my Prime Video subscription. So, that's all for today's review of Chinatown. If you liked what you heard today, then don't forget to like this video, comment, share it, click that subscribe button, and turn on those post notifications so you get notified when I upload all the new episodes. If you want to stay updated on all things Cobb's Corner, then all you need to do is follow me on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. All of that information is in the description below. For those of you that made it to the end of this episode, I greatly appreciate you. Click the video on the screen right now to listen to my last episode where I reviewed The Godfather. It is a complete banger of an episode. As always, I'll talk to all of you in the next episode. Hope you guys enjoyed your stay here at Cobb's Corner, your one-stop shop for all things TV, film, and pop culture. Peace.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys. Sound right, boys.